My cousin built that sign.
Really?
Yeah. My cousin Danielle Bonillo.
Very nice. Thanks, yeah. Danielle.
Thanks, Danielle. Yeah. It's my most everything in this laboratory. That's the thing I want. Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. Mm-hmm. He built it like nothing. Like, it was just like, I was just watching him. So usually, this show, I think we're going to kind of like, we don't have any formalities, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't go through the process of getting a bio from you. And, you know, that's just more a testament to how disorganized I am right now. Yeah, it is what it is, though, right?
Free flow of God.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, you're in a rhythm and everything's firing, and sometimes you're not in a rhythm, mm-hmm. you know? And so it is what it is. So, but with us on today, on the Most High Show, if you're listening, if you're watching, we have an amazing show set up. I don't even know what it's going to be about, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be good. Because we got Crystal here. And we got Jamie here.
Yay!
We got Zach on the ones and twos. We got Leslie doing quality control. We are streaming. We're recording. And we're just trying to give back. We're trying to be helpful. You know what I mean? And we like to hear ourselves talk. So that don't hurt.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
So, Jamie, what brings you on to the Most High Show?
So today I am here to testify. I'm here to just share my experience and things that I've learned in this wild life that I've lived, and hope that it will be helpful and to give some women and men some encouragement and help uplift and just motivate you and help you understand you know, how worthy you really are to be here and to be in this life and to be in recovery, and that you are worthy of love and joy and peace, and that you can achieve it.
Yeah, even Zach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why is that? Why be here talking that? What's happened in your life that's made it to where that's something you want to talk about tonight?
So for most of my life, I struggled with unworthiness, a lot of rejection, a lot of self-hatred. I grew up in a very violent alcoholic household, and I had pretty much like kind of like an unstable growing up. You know, my father was Sicilian, and he was connected with the mob. So there was a lot of violence and chaos and things that I saw as a very young girl that young ladies should not be exposed to. And I never knew what I was going to come home to. Was I going to come home to, you know, my dad, and he was watching scary movies and we're making celery and cream cheese? Or am I going to come home to violence and somebody getting in trouble, or the cops being there, or having to do a very quick move up the country, or whatever it is? You know, I went to 12 different schools by the time I got to high school. Wow. So being a person who has struggled with addiction, you know, I already really had trouble feeling comfortable in my own skin. Mm-hmm. So then having to move and meet people and trust people, when I had this situation in my house where I never knew what was going to be going on,
right,
I had to adapt, and I got some really interesting coping mechanisms. And my first addiction was actually escape. And I used that in different ways, whether that be reading, video games, food. Mm. Also, like, every time I would move somewhere, I would, like, make up this, like, new identity. Like, oh, they didn't like Jamie over here, so I'm going to make up Jamie over here. And maybe these people will like me, and maybe they'll accept me, and maybe they'll love me. Because, you know, in my household, it wasn't like a nurturing. And my parents were very young when they had me. I don't blame them, you know, at all.
How young is very young?
My mom got pregnant with me when she was 15.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty young.
Yeah. Yes, and so, you know, my earliest memory with her was her screaming at me, I wish you were never born. Mm. My second memory of her is her crying, and I remember sitting on her lap and going, did Daddy hit you again? And so very unstable, traumatic, a lot of rejection, abandonment. You know, it wasn't the kind of household where it was like, let's raise the child and put our time and love and effort into her. It was, you know, they were just in survival themselves. Right. So.
But you said, like, there were still those moments when you would show up and it was, what was it, celery and cream cheese and scary movies. And there were still beautiful moments within all of that chaos.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just never knew what you were going to get.
Yeah. You basically grew up with them, you know, which is hard.
Yeah.
It's very hard because, you know, they're trying to figure out life and then trying to figure out life with a kid. Like, so I had my daughter when I was 19, which is a little bit older, but not by much. And I was still, you know, wanting to party and all in my active addiction. And, like, you know, I saw this meme the other day. She's now 12. And so I saw this meme the other day and it said, you know, like, this is just the gist of it, but it was saying, you know, sorry that I had you at such a young age. Like, you saw parts of me that were unhealed and, like basically just apologizing. I screenshotted it and sent it to her. Like, I have a good relationship with her, but I get it. Like, I understand having a kid young it's tough, man. Mm-hmm. Very tough.
Yeah. I was 23 when the first one came. A little bit older.
Still kind of young, though.
Yeah. But I'm, like, perpetually freaking 12, so, you know. Yeah, I mean? Like,
even to this day.
Even to this day. I'm 14, actually, now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Moving up.
Yeah, I'm moving up in the world. So growing up in this unstable, you know, like, I was talking to somebody, was filming down in Florida, and somebody was like, yeah, you know, I often hear other addicts and alcoholics say, I grew up in a pretty normal family, you know, my dad would beat me and, you know, and it's like, no, that's not normal. When did you realize that the way you were growing up wasn't quote unquote normal? How about we use a better word, healthy?
Oh, I thought everybody was going through what I went through. I had no idea that I had any kind of different circumstances, you know, except for the fact that I knew that I couldn't tell anybody about certain things,
yeah,
you know.
The family secrets. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, honestly, it really wasn't until like just the last couple years, you know. I have 8.5 years free from the bondage of addiction.
8.5 years, that's good.
And
am I the only one clapping for 8.5 years? Let's go, baby. Come on.
And
got a bunch of people here with 30 days. They don't even know what 8.5 years looks like.
It really is achievable. My first meeting, I went to somebody, walked by, and they said they had 89 days sober, and I was like, you're a liar. Yeah. So I get it.
So 8.5 years of continuous recovery.
Yes.
But it's really been just the last few years that you begin to really unpack this kind of stuff.
Absolutely, with my trauma and things like that, and realizing.
Does that give you hope, Crystal? How much clean time you have?
I'm about to hit 4.
Yeah.
But yeah, people. Yes, everything gives me hope. As long as if somebody's growing, that's what matters.
Yeah. Sometimes, like, because I feel the same. Like, in the longer that I've stayed, it's like there's more. Just like you keep going, right? Just keep growing, right? And sometimes I'm hesitant to share some of that because I don't want somebody thinking like, here's somebody with 12 and they're still freaking miserable. You know what I mean? So,
but listen though, that's life.
It is. It is.
It's life.
And I also think it's a testament to that, like what really, like how long this stuff takes. Mm-hmm. Right. So what changed a couple years ago?
So, you know, my first 4 or 5 years was really just, you know, because when I came into recovery, I was homeless, right? I had nothing. Mm-hmm. I walked into a sober living facility, this house with like 13 girls in Athens, Georgia. I was like, what is this, a sober sorority? Like, what is this? You know, I've never seen this before. And, you know, I had four shirts and 2 pairs of pants and a pair of shoes, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like that, I had nothing. So the first like 4 or 5 years was really me rebuilding, like building, yep. We call it like recovery capital, right? Like a stable house, like, you know, place, housing, job, car, insurance, off probation, right? Mm-hmm. Like yeah. paying off fines, right? And I did work steps. I worked, you know, many different variations of the steps. I'm a huge believer in 12-step programs. Also, my faith is huge, huge for me. And I did start to, we call it, peel off the layers of the yep. onion, you know, when I was working the steps and growing my relationship with my higher power, who I choose to call Jesus. And but it was like, it really wasn't until I started really being outspoken in recovery on like social media and as a recovery coach sharing my story that I realized that this wasn't normal. The stuff that I had been through wasn't normal. Like the faces of people when I would like, you know, share things and I would be like, what, isn't that?
Like, you didn't go through that too?
What do you mean?
Yeah.
You know? And, but it gave me a lot of like boldness and courage and encouragement. And it was like processing and healing. And I got to meet a lot of women who had been through a lot of the things I had been through. And, because, you know, a lot of my stuff, in my addiction, I'm also in recovery 7.5 years from sex work.
Okay.
So that was like a huge part of my story.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, where I found a lot of my value and worth and, mm-hmm. you know, survival and all these things, and always needed to, it was like, you know, how I survived basically. Right. So, yeah.
And that's a whole like show right there,
mm-hmm. yeah.
because I have some friends, similar situation, and that was the way they were living. And then they get clean or sober or maintain recovery, whatever word. But that's the way they know how to make money. Mm-hmm. That's the way they know how to exist in society. But then it also kind of doesn't quite align anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And there's become self-worth starts creeping in, and you kind of go, this is my experience from, you know, being friends with them and talking to them and interviewing them. But that's a good, we need to really talk about that, I think, because it's a hard shift, right? Because you said 8 and then 7.5. So it took you mm-hmm. some time to make that adjustment, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. All of that didn't just leave with me yeah. when I walked into yeah. this mm-hmm. new way. Like the drugs fell off, right? Because I got drug tested two, three times a week. And if I wanted to stay there, you know, mm-hmm. I had to pass the drug test. And I got a job because I had to pay the rent, yeah. you know, if I wanted to stay there. Right. But everything didn't fall off at once, you know, and that really took me starting to work steps. That was kind of like where it kind of started to come off. You know, I want to say like between like step 2 and step 3 is where the obsession was lifted. Mm-hmm. And I no longer freaked out when I went into a Quick Trip bathroom, you know, or, you know, got triggered, you know, from just various things. And then it was probably at about 6 months. I was about 6 months in, And I was, you know, working my third step, going into my fourth step. And a friend, she was a roommate. I was dating, I'm in air quotations, dating this guy, right? Because he was helping me like pay my rent, right? And the director, she kind of called me out on it because we had to turn in our pay stubs, right? Yeah. I'm working at IHOP, right? And she's like, how are you paying this money? Your pay stubs, you know what I mean? And she's like, no, this isn't adding up. Like, you need to be independent. You need to be self-sufficient. And I was like, man, you know, like, yep. I couldn't even fathom the idea. How am I supposed to pay my rent? How am I supposed to survive without, you know, doing these mm-hmm. things? You know, how am I supposed to get around? I don't have a car.
It's right? expensive too.
yeah. Like, it took me 18 months in recovery before I ever got a car, you know? And I remember I had this roommate. Her name was Tina, and I'll never forget her. She was a little older than me, and she's just a woman of great faith. She heard me on the phone one day talking to, you know, one of these guys, you know, and she looked at me and she said, hey, sis, you don't got to do that. I'll give you a ride. I will bring you to work. And I was just
I love that.
What? Like, for real? Like, you're going to help me? You know, yeah. Just mind blown.
That's big. I mean, I think that, asking for help it takes a long time. Mm. I mean, I'm still not even very good at it, right? I don't even know what help. I know I'd ask for the wrong help, you know, but like, it takes a long time to realize that people actually do care and do want to help you and your interests to get better and to live, right? Because the life that we're living before, everybody is out to get you, or you're using everybody else.
Or they're using you.
Right. Yeah.
There's just no truth. You know what I mean? Nobody's genuine.
Yeah. So she steps up and decides to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she kind of just took me under her wing, you know, and she, like I said, she's a woman of great faith. She was very versed in the Bible, and she began teaching me about like prayer and faith. And I grew up in a denomination that is very works-based. You know, so I didn't really know much about like relationship or right. anything like that. I just knew, well, if you do this and you do this and you do this, then you'll go to heaven.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's like, check.
Yeah. Check the boxes. Say these prayers and you're forgiven. So, yeah, she taught me about it and taught me about having faith and what that meant. And one day she brought me to this church, and it was nothing like any church I had ever been to. It was a very amazing. It was an apostolic church, and it was wild worship. Yeah, like it was just like I'd never seen anything like it before. Dancing and singing, and you know, just it was just so beautiful. And they asked at the end, "Does anybody want to get baptized?" And it was literally like my hand just shot up. Just shot up. And they, you know, took me in the back and put me in this freezing cold baptismal pool. I mean, mm-hmm. it was amazing. They had to dunk me twice because I didn't go under the first time all the way out.
No way. Like, really had to dunk you? I always joke when I baptize someone. I was like, I'm going to dunk you twice. But you actually had to be dunked twice.
Yes, they actually did. And then after they, there was like four or five women that came, and they laid hands on me and they prayed over me. And I never felt this kind of like, this like power over me, you know, mm-hmm. it was amazing. This just like Holy Spirit presence. And they started like, you know, prophesying over me, and you're not going back to that old life. You're not talking to those old friends anymore. You're going to have new friends. You're going to have a new life, and everything is going to be different. And do not look back ever again. Mm-hmm. And it was like, they knew, you know, like they knew mm-hmm. it was wild. And, it was like ever since that day, you know, I had like literally like fully surrendered. I was like, less of Jamie and more of Jesus. I'm ready. I'm all in. Yeah. And it was literally right after my third step. So it was literally like just fell right in line.
Well, it's the power of a spiritual experience, right? Which is different from a spiritual awakening,
mm-hmm.
right? But a spiritual experience can really shift you and transform you. But it's different than an awakening. mm-hmm. right? I think the awakening lasts. They sometimes spiritual experiences will fade mm-hmm. at after time, right? That's why we got to continue to do the. We got to go. You got to go to 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 right. and 8, right? Yes. You got to continue the process.
Absolutely.
Right? A lot of people have these spiritual experiences and then want to run on that and live on that mm-hmm. because, cool, I'm done. I'm fixed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we see it happen, right? And then it's almost like bears worse testimony to the power of a spiritual experience for anybody, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
Right, because, well, yes, I mean, you know, you have to continue, you know, to die daily, to yeah. crucify your flesh and, you know, work those steps, you know, the 10, 11, 12 every yep. day, right?
Right?
You have to continue to do that. And it was just amazing. Like, it was just, things just fell in line between the recovery steps mm-hmm. and my walk.
That's
with
how
God.
You know it's God.
Yeah.
That's what I always say. Like, mm-hmm. I, you know, there was a topic the other night on a meeting and we were talking about, you know, God's will, and you know, I'm like, ultimately, like, I know what God's will is for me is to be a good human. I mean, like, and so at the end of the day, for me, like, when things just happen or they just fall into place the way that they're meant to, like, that's how I know it's God. I don't question it. I just go with the flow and just keep living, you know,
ride the wave.
Yeah, just keep on going.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody said, it's never been God's will for me to go get, like, a bag of dope. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The Lord's never led me to the dope man. You know what I mean? Like, I led myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of that, like, moving forward for me, learning my worth and my value, and that it didn't lie in how much money I made, mm-hmm. right? But it lied in, you know, like, what I thought about myself and what God thought about me, right? Which was something that was really hard for me to kind of like get to, because it was like, you know, step three, you know, turn your will and your life, you know, your thoughts and your actions over to the care of God, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so I'm doing my fourth step and I've got a five-star notebook, you know what I'm saying, full yep. of resentments, fears, and 3/4 of it is my sex inventory, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, God, so I'm supposed to turn my will and my life over to you. I'm supposed to trust you. But look at all this stuff mm-hmm. that I've done. Like, how do I know what you even think about me? And the next day, I went over to my mom's house and my daughter was there. She's beautiful, 5 years old, hair's a mess. She's got food all over her face. She's scribbling with a crayon, you know, and I'm just looking at her in this like adoration. Like, my heart is just beaming. Like, she's the most beautiful thing I have ever seen mm-hmm. with food all over her face and hair a mess and scribbling with a broken crayon. And God said to me at that moment, that's how I look at you.
Yeah.
And that was just the start of me realizing that there was a lot more to Jamie than I knew.
Right.
Dang. Yeah. I feel like I get those moments, like, periodically, like, consistently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get those, like, kind of emphasis on, yeah, no, I still,
mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's taken me a long time to realize that anytime I've gone to God, that the response is always love,
mm-hmm.
right? It's always. And I think that's really hard. It's hard to even know how do you relate to something that's like that, right? That you can fully trust. You know, like, I believe, I have some beliefs on what, I don't know what God is, right?
Right.
But I do know that its response is always love.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
You might not understand it, but.
Uh-uh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we can really trust it, you know? And there's a part in our literature that says that he failed to enlarge his spiritual life.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an experience with somebody recently and watched them go back And I that saying kept popping in my head. He failed to enlarge his spiritual life. And it just got me thinking, like, okay, I need to talk about what I do know. And what I do know is that you can always return. We have to get really comfortable with the fact that you can always return to whatever God is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Always. And I'm even of the point where I'm starting to think, it doesn't even matter in what state, what you call it. In the beginning, it mm-hmm. don't matter. It's come on, we're going to work this out. Right. Let us sit and be reconciled, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that because, you know, for a long time, like in my first couple of years, like things that would happen that obviously I didn't agree with or I didn't, that were in my will, you know, it took me a long time to get to the point where, like, when things don't go my way, I'm just like, okay, and move on. Because, you know, at the end of the day, like, I might not understand today why this is happening, but God does. And there's a reason for it. And, you know, that when you fully put all of your trust into God, it's
yeah.
great.
Things start to open up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Life seems way smoother. Just.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful I didn't get everything I prayed for.
Right.
So grateful.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because God knows, you know. He's like, you're not going to get that one. But it was, you know, probably to protect you in some yeah. way.
Absolutely. Every prayer gets an answer. It's just not always yes.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, it's either yeah. yes, no, or not yet,
right,
you know.
Right,
right.
Yeah, there's no, like, hold department. We're just like, yeah, we don't know what to do with that one yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have these experiences early on. But like you said, it took some time for you to really begin to address the trauma. And one of the topics that you chose for tonight, you know, these dismantling false beliefs
mm-hmm.
and these early childhood experiences subconsciously cement false beliefs that
Absolutely.
We don't really know. They're kind of like puppet masters in the background. So what did you do, like, practically when these things started to show up? What did you do? What was your process for dismantling it?
So in the beginning, I did some kind of like inner deep therapy. I don't know what you call it. Maybe scientifically they call it cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. I was in a 4-year discipleship under a pastor who was my counselor. And so he called it Holy Spirit ministering. So what I did was say there is a rejection. Like, for example, when I talked about my mom, the first time that, you know, the first memory I had of her screaming at me, I wish you were never born, right? Like, I had such a deep wound of rejection there
right.
that caused me to want to feel accepted in unhealthy ways because anything was better than nothing.
Rejection.
Right. Right. So what I did was anytime that, you know, I felt rejected, I would write it down, like the rejection. And then I would go into my, like, go into, you know, prayer and think, well, when was the first time that I felt that rejection, that feeling of rejection, which was my mother? You know what I mean? Always mm-hmm. went back to that event. And then to look at that event and ask God, what is the truth in that? Like, I think my mom didn't want me. She didn't want me to be born. That's my belief. But that actually is not true if we look at
right.
the whole situation. And I began to pray and ask God for wisdom
yeah.
on what it really was. And that was when he kind of like revealed to me, like, hey, your mom was 15 years old.
Mm-hmm. Right. You start to see your
yes.
mother as a person.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, as a person and the trauma she went through with my father
mm-hmm.
and even childhood, you know, where her father had left her at a very young age. And I began to be able to have like empathy to see her as like just a broken person,
yeah.
just like me. And that she didn't mean, you know, I wish you, I didn't want to have you. She didn't mean that. I was her daughter, mm-hmm. you know, I may have thought that, you know, before when I was frustrated about my kids too. Right. But that's not the truth. That's
right.
not really
right.
Yeah.
what the truth was.
Yeah.
And then being able to not only see the truth in that, have empathy, forgive her for that, and then to just to reaffirm in myself, you know, my mother loves me. She accepts me. God loves me and accepts me. I was chosen. I was predestined. He chose me before I was born. He knitted me in my mother's womb, you know? Yeah. So being able to look at...
You're replacing the false belief with a new belief, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
With the truth.
Yeah. Because you can't think two thoughts at the same time. And when you dismantle one, if you don't put something back there, right?
Right.
To rebuild, to reinforce that. Mm-hmm. So this was an inner process. But now there's something different in forgiving someone for their offense and healing from the wound that they created. Did you find that true too?
Yes, absolutely. And it is still something that I struggle with also. You know, I mean, it's especially because at 90 days sober, my mom actually took custody of my kids from me. And I was living in the sober living. I actually stayed in sober living for 3.5 years.
Oh,
wow. It was, yes, nobody get in a rush to leave sober living. The way that ours was set up, it was kind of like on like a campus, you know, so we had step up houses. So I went from a house with 13 girls to a house with 4 girls to a, you know, 2 people. Right. And then finally my own apartment, but still on campus where I still had...
Oh, it's a cool system.
Yes, very. It was amazing. And then I was, you know, very involved sponsoring women and all of these things. So I stayed very, very involved in that 3.5 years. But fun fact, in the state of Georgia, when you live in sober living, you are considered homeless.
Right.
So when I tried to fight for custody, I lost. And by the time I did move into my own place, which was 5 driveways down into the townhouses where the staff of the sober living lived, which is still where I reside
still
today.
Your own place.
like my kids had already been with her for so long that I wasn't gonna uproot them and be like, no, you've been with her since you were born. Come with me now.
Oh, you know? Wow.
So
do they still live with her?
They do.
My daughter still lives with her grandparents too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we have a lot of a much better relationship. But it did take my mom 5 years to literally like open her, let her guard down and open her arms, you know, back to me and say, you know, she was like, you can come move back in. And I was like, nah, I'm not coming to move back in, but I'll come stay on the weekends. And we began to co-parent, you know.
So did you find that? Has that been true for you when you're... With your situation and your experience?
What?
With your daughter and living with her.
Yeah, so at this point, you know, Braylee is old enough that it's her choice. And, you know, if she wanted to live with me, she knows that she could say that and it would happen. But I don't feel like it would be fair to her for me to just yank her from where she's literally been her entire life. Because what is that? You know, that's... She's going to resent the hell out of me for that. And then it strains our relationship. She doesn't want to be there. She's miserable. She, like, I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
I don't want her to deal with that. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very tough decision. It's because, you know, for the longest time when I was in active addiction as a parent, one of the reasons I wanted to get sober was so that I could be a mom. And now that I'm sober, I'm like, when's this going to happen?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's God. It's God's timing. So, you know, she says that when we buy a house that she wants to live with us. But, you know, if it's God's will, it'll happen.
Yeah. I mean, this is an important topic, too.
Absolutely. Because there is so much mom guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Because that
so
was.
Much.
Yes, that was mine, too. You know, I mean, like I literally gave my kids to my mom, like when I was in addiction. Right. Because. You know, and there's no shame in that either, because a mother's job is to take care of her children. And if you're not well enough to take care of your children, good for you for putting them in the care
not dragging
of someplace
them through it.
Safe, you know? and then also coming into recovery, you know, it was almost like a spiteful, like, I'm going to get my own place and I'm going to get my kids back and we're not going to talk to you anymore. You know?
Yeah. Like, it's weird. Like, they become the enemy, right? The person who steps in and does your, you know, we had a the reason why I say that is because we had an experience where we fought, like, kind of not technically fostered. But we had a kid that came and lived with us, and we took him in. His mom was supposed to go to rehab, and it was supposed to be 90 days, and he lived with us for like 3 years, you know. but she hated us, you know, and it was like, I totally understand. I didn't understand, but I was like, you know, it was interesting to see, like, how are we the enemy? When we took him in.
I can tell you. How? Because you're doing something that she's not able to. Mm-hmm. I hated, for the longest time, I hated my daughter's, her dad's parents. You know, because they're getting to do what I wish that I was able to do. And for the, you know, for so many years, I didn't know how to get out of addiction. I wanted to, but I didn't know. I couldn't find a solution. I could not find what I needed, you know, what I needed. And it took time and it took me try after try after try. But, you know, yeah, you do become the enemy because it's like you are able to do what we want so badly to be able to do. It's just we can't most of the time, you know, we can't figure it out.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah. Well, if anyone's listening and going through this, you know, you can reach out directly to the show. Contact at the Most High Show. You got two strong women here who can help to talk you through this process if you're in the middle of this. Because I know there's stages of this, and some people are early in this process. And I sat across the table from a friend who's dealing with this right now, you know, and she's only kind of allowed phone calls and an occasional visit, you know, and she's so frustrated. And trying to help her to understand, like, let this thing take some time, you know, like, but coming from me, you know, I'm just mansplaining some bullshit, you know, it's got to come from somebody who's been through that so that she can understand. So contact the Most High Show, reach out, and we'll connect you personally to, right? I'm not getting, y'all would do it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why I wanted to emphasize 5 years. It took my mother 5 years before she was like, "Oh, I'm in sober living. All these girls, their parents coming to visit them, taking them to get their nails done, buying them cars, and mine won't even, you know what I mean? Don't want nothing to do with me, you know what I mean?" And it was just like, what is it? But then when that wall fell after 5 years, it was during COVID, you know, and I literally got to stay there, you know, with my kids for like 3 months, you know, like living with them. And it was amazing. And it doesn't matter, like, because we think like, oh, they're not going to be little. Well, my son is 19 and I still have a faceted role as his mother, you know what I mean? In whatever age it is. So don't think that you're going to lose and you're not going to be a mom because, you know, God gave you, you know, those children. So you will be like a mom in one aspect or another. And if it's not to your children, because that's not possible, believe me, you will be a mother figure to somebody else's children, you know?
Yeah. I didn't know that when I had kids. Like, once you become a parent, you never are not a parent. Like until you die, you are a parent. And seeing that in my dad, because my parent, I have a great relationship with my parents now, and seeing that and realizing I'm still my dad's son, right? And then my son will always be my son, right? And even with friends of mine who have lost children, right? They're still a parent to that child.
Yep.
You know, once you become a parent, you're never not, right? So you begin this process. I'm trying to keep us on track. This has all been really dismantling these false beliefs and beginning to heal from these wounds. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At what point are you tiptoeing through the tulips?
So it literally was like, let's see, I became a recovery coach with Georgia Council in 2018. And that was kind of, you know, up until that point, I remember I found out I had hepatitis C then, and I got cured from hepatitis C in 2018. That was amazing. And I was still one of these people that kind of wanted to get through my recovery, sweep it under the rug, and move on, right?
Yep.
And at this point, you know, like 3.5 years, I moved into my own townhouse. I had started my own business in sober living. Started my own business, right? And became self-sufficient, became a recovery coach. Like I had taken a period of 18 months to work on myself. I strongly suggest this to the ladies, like, and gentlemen also. I can just speak to the ladies. but seriously, I took 18 months where I did not date. I did not, like, go, like, all my friends are going and doing things, and I was literally home building my business, working on my steps, working on this healing, working on, you know, I mean, still going to meetings, obviously, like being involved, service work, right? Service work was like my love language in recovery. And but took this 18 months, and what I found was this girl who was worth pouring into. I was like, oh my goodness, like, why do I want to sweep all this recovery stuff under the rug and act like it didn't happen? Like, it was like every time I had talked to a client in my business, right, and I had said something about being in recovery, oh, my son, oh, my daughter, oh, my uncle, oh, my friend's kid, right? There was addiction everywhere, right? I had survived something, not only survived something that killed so many people, and still is today, but I completely turned my life around and was thriving, right? So why was I so ashamed of it, you know? And it kind of hit me like, no, like, you are worth pouring into, you are worth sharing your story, like, people need to hear this. This is powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is nothing to be ashamed of. This is nothing to sweep under the rug. And so that started me sharing, you know, on social media. And I just started doing like little like lives or whatever. And I would do like morning lives and do my devotionals or whatever, or just share some kind of encouragement. And the feedback that I got was just mind blowing to me. Like, people, you know, on the other side of the world, like, I was going to relapse today and I saw your video, you know, like, yeah. I wanted to kill myself, but I saw how you made it through this and I did it. Like, powerful, so powerful. So that was like another like false belief that I need to be ashamed of, yeah, being in addiction, right? Mm-hmm. No.
What's it? We shall not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it.
Right?
Like, it becomes our greatest tool in helping other people. Yeah.
And so taking this.
When you've healed from it.
Yes. Yes. Taking this time, right? No dating, no nothing. And, you know, believe me, I used relationships just as addictively as I used drugs, boy, right? So, like, really, like, taking this time, it really, it allowed me to see my, not only my value and my worth, right? And not, and like, before I would look at relationships and people like, oh, they like me, they think I'm pretty, right? But when I began to heal and work on myself and realize that I was worthy and I was valuable and I was special and I was priceless, I began to see it as, if I like you, if I allow you to have time in my life, you know what I'm saying? Like, I started to realize it wasn't just who was going to accept me, but it was like, you know, what was going to be good for my future.
Right.
Yeah. What was
going to
fit. You
finally have a choice.
Yes.
You know, you have the ultimate say. And when you have that power, there's nothing like it. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's something about the self-acceptance and self-love. It's almost like we can't receive that from other. We receive like a synthesized version of it. Until we can fully love and accept ourselves, right? And I mean, this is a process for me as well. Like, I'm still learning levels to this of like self-acceptance and self-love, because my natural state is self-hatred. I mean, fundamentally, that's if I don't do anything, you know, and I just try to, you know, get money and, you know, live a life, right? And I don't do any kind of spiritual development or honest self-reflection or honest relationships with other men, then my default, I will always go, I kind of always kind of veer right back to that self-hatred, you know? And learning how to love yourself and accept myself has opened it up to where now all of a sudden I realize, oh, well, this person actually does appreciate me, does love me, is wanting to help me, does have, like, but it's weird, right? It's like a paradoxical thing, because until I can fully receive it for myself, I can't receive it from, authentically receive it from other people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why they say, you know, we'll love you until you learn to love yourself.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah. Love you back to life.
Yeah, that too. I think that that is probably one of, you know, my favorite parts of recovery is like getting my power back, because the mom guilt, the mom shame really was one of the biggest, you know, driving forces for my addiction. And so finally getting to a place in my life where, like, accepting that truth and yeah, I did do these things and I wasn't there for my daughter and I did hurt her and I, you know, did act in selfish ways every day of my life. But being able to accept that and saying, but that's not who I am today. Who I am today is a child of God. I am a mother. I have a good relationship with my daughter. I can show my daughter that, like, you know, living a life is worth it. Like, I can be a vessel to other women who have gone through the same thing that I've gone through or are going through the same thing, you know? And I think that, the power in connection is just amazing. You know, like, if women connect with women, men connect with men, and then, you know, people just connect with people. And so, for me, that's another part of recovery that I just love is the connection, because it's like if somebody's struggling and they, for example, your videos, you know, somebody's struggling, they see something, they connected with you in that video and it probably saved their life on that day. You know what I mean? And that is just like having that power is, and that's God, you know, God for me, like God works through me and works through others in my life. And I love it. I love every bit of it.
Yeah.
Here for it.
I don't know when he decided not to burn bushes anymore, but you know what I mean? A burnt bush every once in a while would be nice. You know what I mean? Or a cloud, you know, or a lamp, you know, like now it just comes through other like fouled humans, you know, for me. Yeah, it's very natural, the language of God. For me, that's my experience, you know. I want those experiences and those white light moments. And I always get, what's in front of you? I'm always like, damn it, not this answer again. What's in front of me, dude?
Start looking at pride.
Yeah. But that's a relationship, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and a consistent, like, message of love and continuing of saying, what's in front of you? What's in front of you? And no, like, it's like where they, you know, when you're in navigation and then and you make a wrong turn, and the nav just goes, rerouting.
Yeah.
That's it.
Over and over and over.
It doesn't go, hey, dumbass, you made a wrong turn. It just goes, rerouting. Don't worry, we're going to get you there. And you turn again, and then the nav goes, rerouting. It's getting you, it's going to get you to where you're going to get, mm-hmm. right? And no matter how many wrong turns you take, it's just, okay, cool, we're rerouting, you know? But I wanted to develop a navigation that, like, talks shit, you know, when you turn wrong.
They have that, don't they?
I don't know if they do, but I thought that'd be funny.
I'm sure they probably do.
Maybe. It'd be funny, like, if you had Cat Williams, like, talking shit to you when you made a wrong turn, you know?
I want to say Waze has some pretty cool different, I don't voices know if it, like, talks shit, but.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know they have an Australian guy.
You have an Australian?
Do you have him?
My mom has him. My mom has been single since 2006 when my father passed. She's man crazy.
So she has an Australian thing, huh?
They do have cool accents, though.
Yeah, they do.
So it's interesting. We're probably start, you know, wrapping it up. We definitely need to do this again. And I appreciate for anyone listening, you know, Jamie, you drove about 2 hours or so to get here, yes, to be here tonight.
Dang, girl, that's dedication.
And you got to drive out of the darkness of where we're at here in Cherokee to get back. So greatly appreciate you doing this. But it's interesting you're talking about rejection because on my drive home today, that's one of the things I was marinating on. And I called a brother and he was like, you know, when you feel rejection, when I feel rejection, I am rejected, right? Like if I'm feeling it, it is real, right? Like mm-hmm. even though it technically isn't, right? But if I feel it, like my body and my mind and my emotions will respond to that. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting, the small things that are becoming aware to me that they've been little issues in my life and I'm realizing, oh, that's rejection. And I don't like the feeling of rejection. And so what I want to do is immediately not feel rejection. So I will do whatever it is. Unhealthy coping mechanisms, music, call a friend, some healthy coping mechanisms. But the thing I'm not doing is sitting in the emotion of rejection and actually feeling it and feel that sinking feeling of my heart kind of dropping into my gut, which is like so scary to me. Mm-hmm. But it's like I'm realizing now that the thing that I've been fighting, which is feeling it, is the path through it. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, especially with this thing of rejection, because I grew up kind of with, you know, probably not to the extreme of you, but, you know, like of that unbalanced, mm-hmm. unsure, you know, alcoholic father, not sure who I'm getting when I walk in the room and learning very quickly how to put on fronts and masks and personas to exist in the world, you know, and somewhere here I am lost in all of that, right? So, you know, and this is like for me, it's 12 years, right? And it's not hard to get 12 years. You just don't use and drink. Mm-hmm. That's it. And they'll give you a fucking chip. It's not hard. But what is hard is actually growing and healing. And that's mm-hmm. what you're talking about here with this dismantling false beliefs and continuing to do that work. And looking at like the steps being your foundation, but then also expanding your spiritual life. Mm-hmm. Right? And becoming open to a new way of thinking and a new method, a different framework that might help you. Because all these different frameworks, we need all of them, right? At least that's what I've found. I need all of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the, you know, rejection will hold you back from the fear of rejection. The trauma of rejection will hold you back from achieving your goals, your destiny, your purpose, right? Because you'll never want to step out of that comfort zone.
Oh, yeah.
You'll never want to like shoot for the stars for your dreams, you know?
Or even write a goal down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why even have a goal? Because I know I'm not going to make it.
Right.
So I'm just going to keep it small. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's so... like so important to like to heal those wounds and those traumas and I just feel like it's like learning your identity, like truly learning your identity, your worth, your value, achieving things you didn't think you could achieve, you know, like for me to be like I say self-sufficient, but don't misunderstand the fact that I pray through everything. Yeah. I can't even go to the gym without praying. Yeah. Like, please God, it's help me grace. With this leg day. Yeah. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
But like being able to be like a self-sufficient woman, I pay my rent. You know, I pay my car note. I have a savings account. You know, I have insurance. I go on vacations, right?
Yep.
And I do this being a single woman, right? Like, and I don't have to do things that make me feel bad in order to achieve any of these goals.
Right.
So yeah. that is the miracle.
Yeah.
Love that.
All right. So as we close, we kind of do a thing where you take a look at your camera, which is right here. And for the woman who might be listening or the person who might be listening, And they're considering either maybe they're considering doing this work. Maybe they know that there's a more freedom to be had. What would you say to that person?
I would tell them that they have no idea how, you have no idea how valued and loved and worthy you are. You have no idea that you are priceless, that you can achieve anything that you want to achieve. Anything, whatever that is, like whatever your goal, your dream is, you have something inside of you, a power inside of you that can take you to these next levels, and you can experience a joy and a peace that will come from within you, and a love that will just like envelop you, like every day. Like every day, this intimacy and this love from this higher power, from God, you know, you're the shirt. I just can't, it's the shirt. No high like the Most High. I have never felt an intimacy like I have felt with God. If, you know, and it takes doing this work to be able to receive all the love. And you deserve it.
Amen. About you, Crystal, you got something? You want to draw some jams? You spit some game real quick? You got one, bust a rap or something?
Well, I would just tell somebody, anybody that will listen, it's worth it. It is so worth it to put in the work. The only way to get on the other side is through it. That's what I was going to tell you about your feelings. You know, life is life. We're going to have bad days. We're going to have good days. We're going to have highs. We're going to have lows. But if we allow God to walk with us through all of that, and, you know, we build a network, I think that's one of the most important pieces, is building a network to lean on when we go through these bad things, and allowing the people that we build the network with to love us while we learn to love ourselves. You will find that this way of life is really actually quite easy. And it's worth it. It's so worth it.
Amen. Well, thank you both for being here. Thank you for listening to the Most High Show. Thank you once again for Zach volunteering his time to run the ones and twos, Leslie here, and for the crew that hung out in the audience. If you're struggling, if you need some help, no matter what it is, just reach out, contact at the Most High Show. And thank you to all the generous sponsors and donors who make this possible. Peace.
Good job.
Ta-da.
You know, I feel like we just scratched the surface.
I know. We could have sat there for 15 hours.
That's so good.
Yeah, I've learned a lot. Yeah. I've learned a lot of things. I just want to.
I'm like half of what you got, and I'm like.